Hey everyone, this is Jamie Bateman. Real quickly, I wanted to share with you something that's been pivotal in the growth and success of my businesses, and that is my partnership with Haven Financial Services. I've been working with Haven for over a year now. Christine Valdez was on episode 70 of this podcast, so go check that out if you want to hear her story. It was a fantastic personal story for sure, but Haven has been awesome. They provide me with monthly reports that are super clear and discernible, and that provides me with clarity and focus so that I can do what I do best, which is running my businesses, not preparing financial reports. Again, if you're in the market for a top-notch financial service company, or if you just want to check one out, go to www.jamiebateman/haven and check out Haven Financial Services. Again, that's jamiebateman/haven. Can't recommend them enough. Christine and her team have been fantastic. So I definitely recommend you check out Haven Financial Services at www.jamiebateman/haven. Let's get back to the show. This episode is fantastic. We chat with Tanya Alvarez, who at age 25 started a New York ad agency using credit cards and went from zero to $1 million in revenue in the first year. She's overcome a whole lot in her life. She's 45 now, and we chat a good bit about health struggles that she's been through, although perspective is critical with regard to that and how, frankly, her sister has much more severe health struggles. And so how Tanya sees this, her own challenges as truly a blessing in comparison. We talk about how to scale your business with purpose. Talk a lot about accountability and group accountability. She runs a company now called Owners Up, and they provide accountability groups for entrepreneurs. And so that's really one of the main themes through this episode is intentionality, but specifically with regard to creating accountability in your life and holding yourself accountable through community and small groups, and again, particularly targeted for entrepreneurs. We talk a good bit about cost and prioritization, how everything has a cost. There's almost always an opportunity cost or some other cost when you're making a choice in life, and how if you get your principles and your values down, you know, that really helps with kind of the day-to-day micro decisions along the way. We talk about how Tanya became a mother in March of 2020, which, if you recall, there was a pandemic all of a sudden, and she was in New York City, and now she has two children, and how she we chat a little bit about how she created an advisory board for her to meet her husband as well. So very intentional along the way. She is an endurance athlete. But has been able to figure out how to balance being a mother and a successful entrepreneur, which is obviously not easy. She's a world traveler, came from almost nothing, is super successful and quite an inspiration. And I know she will be to you as well.
Welcome to From Adversity to Abundance, the go-to podcast for real estate entrepreneurs seeking not just to thrive, but to conquer with resilience and mental sharpness. Each week, join us as we dive into the compelling world of real estate through the lens of mental fitness, where challenges transform into opportunities. Get ready to transform your mindset and expand your understanding of what it takes to succeed in real estate. Let's explore these stories of triumph and resilience together.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm thrilled today to have with us Tanya Alvarez of Owners Up. She is the founder, and she has a lot of other things going on we're going to get into. I'm excited to hear your story, Tanya. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This is going to be a fun one for sure. I haven't recorded in a little bit, so you're gonna have to keep me on my toes. This will be fun.
Okay.
So for the listener who's unfamiliar with you, who are you and what are you up to today?
Yeah, so right now, I started my first business at 25, grew it over 1 million within the first year. Sold it, invested in others, and I'm actually doing Owners Up. It's something I wish I had on my journey of entrepreneurship. And what ends up happening is here I was training for the Boston Marathon. And even though I was a collegiate distance athlete, I still joined a team of people, even though I knew exactly what to do and what to train for. Because just like business, running a marathon, you sign up, you're excited, and it's a long journey. And you want
Absolutely.
peers to encourage you, a coach to see your blind spots and kind of course correct you. And I realized that when I was growing my business really quickly, I didn't have anybody, and I wanted that constant feedback, that constant accountability, that system to move me forward and not be, let's be honest, a workaholic. There's so
Sure.
many workaholics. So that's what Owners Up
Absolutely.
is about. Think of it as a CrossFit for small businesses.
Okay. Awesome. So just before we jump into your backstory, so for you personally, what does a day in your life look like? What's a typical day look like for you?
Wow, it's still different. Now I have two kids. I have a 1.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old. So, you know what, how everybody always talks about do this in this morning, do this. I'm like, no, my mornings are sometimes I wake up before them, but like be very quiet. I feel like they have bat ears and like, you can hear me and smell me. And so they wake up. So what I usually do is I wake up, and until they're out the door to go to daycare, my day doesn't fully start in the sense of my personal work. It's
Sure.
all about them. And then
Got
after
it.
that, I make sure I have a ritual of really closing up my day and being present with my kid.
Love that.
And that's a hard one, I would say, for most entrepreneurs, because even though like you can be with
Absolutely.
your kids, but you're still mentally thinking about your business. And you think,
Yes.
oh, well, I'm here. My business won't, my kids won't notice. Yeah. There's a certain energy they can notice.
That's true. Kids are very insightful for sure. And I know you have some great processes for goal setting and frameworks and things like that we can get into in a bit. But I appreciate that you're keeping it real, right? It's like people love to put out that their morning routine of 25, this cold plunge and whatever else. And that's cool and that can work and that's great. But the reality is it's not always, life is messy, especially as an entrepreneur. And you've got to be able to react and pivot and still kind of keep your eyes on the long-term prize, if you will. So let's jump into your backstory. I know you've dealt with adversity. And again, the show, we're here to inspire entrepreneurs, encourage people. Keep it real though, and let them know that you're gonna go through hard times. We've all been through hard times. We're gonna continue to go through hard times. It doesn't mean Tanya doesn't have any more adversity in her life. But I know you've been through some financial struggles in starting your business, and I know you've been through some health challenges as well. Where would you like to start with your backstory, Tanya?
A great question. And before I start on that one, I feel like if you're not being challenged, you're not growing.
I love that. Yeah. Couldn't
Right?
agree more.
So pressure, diamonds, right? So
Absolutely.
anybody who says, oh yeah, I have it all taken care of, that means you're just not growing. Maybe that's a season
That's
that you just don't want to grow. It's totally okay. Everything's in seasons.
a great point.
I was raised by a single mom who immigrated to the US from Colombia. She had she has a me included four kids. And my oldest sister has a rare disease called osteogenesis imperfecta, which is brittle bones. And that means that she can have like her bones are like pencils and she can break them very
Wow.
easily. So I found out that I had this after I ran in half Ironman and I fractured my hip. So my severity isn't as bad, but right now I'm at the age of 45 and I probably have, I don't know, I haven't got my bones scanned, but they're not as strong as most other people. So I could fracture, but because I work out and live a healthy lifestyle, I'm very fortunate. So in that in the osteogenesis imperfecta, kind of like the worst is kid gets the baby starts breaking bones in the womb, in the stomach, and then they're born and some die 2 days after.
Wow.
And then the next level could be like a level of my sister's where she's, you know, she's a wheelchair user and she breaks a lot of bones. She's broken over 200 bones. And I would say one of mine would be the one of like, mine is just like, I've broken two bones after a half Ironman. The other one is I moved to Minnesota and I slipped on black ice and then fractured both my wrists when I had an 8 month old. That was a whole thing of surrender.
Well, I love how you're, absolutely. I can imagine that. It's interesting you say that about you kind of alluded to the fact that it's really all about your perspective, because, you know, you could very easily be bitter and say that why me and why did I get this health condition? And most people don't have this brittle bone condition, right? And so, you know, it's not fair, right? But compared to most people who have the condition, you have it pretty good, it sounds like. And I don't want to put words in your mouth. I
have it really good. And even when I fractured, I will say, when I found out running was my identity, and when I found out that if I continued running, I would have a hip replacement, I was a little down the next day. And then my sister, who has OI, she says, after your bones are healed, you're going to be able to walk and do things.
Yeah.
And that was like, boom, got me out of it in days.
Yeah.
And
I'll just chime in just briefly. And I won't go too far into this, but we actually just found out about, so my son is a teenager, and it's taken us 14 years to find out that he does have a genetic condition that's really rare. And again, I'll save this for another episode, but I shared with him the other day that when we just found this out, we shared this information with him as well. And so he's had some real challenges associated with this for his whole life. You know, but again, it's like, compared to most kids or people who have this genetic condition, that they call it a kind of a misspelling, he's really, really doing well. I mean, a lot of these kids have serious heart conditions and bone conditions and muscular conditions that, or they're not actually able to learn to speak ever. And he's certainly had struggles, and we've had a hard year, to be honest with you. But I simply say that, it's all about your perspective. And I think, you know, we're seeing this as we're really blessed, and he's really blessed that it could have been a lot worse. And actually, I told him that it's so rare that the hospital wants to study him. And so they, you know, that he's pretty excited now to learn more about his own, you know, genetics and things like that. But it's also
a great story. That's what my sister always told me. She goes, you are going to be so resilient, and your story is going to inspire others. And you get to create that. A lot of people haven't gone through that.
It's so true. Okay. So now, at what age did this really hit you, or this is a lifelong thing you're dealing with? Was there kind of an inflection point in that part of your story at all?
Well, it was one of those things where my sister, I've always lived like tomorrow isn't promised because of her. And then I had to make a really hard decision when having my own kids. I had kids through IVF so I could eliminate that gene moving forward. And the hardest part about that is my sister was such a big impact in my life. And here I am removing the gene, right?
Yeah.
So my first generations moving forward won't have it. That was a really hard one I had to sit with, and it made me who I am too. So that's the whole story of the health thing. And then I learned running wasn't my identity. I can always create something new and explore new things. So I went into cycling. I do a bunch of things, and I'm like, oh, I'm just creating myself every time. It wasn't a set identity. Sometimes at least for me, I associate, and that was like my identity. That's what people know me for. Oh my God, if I can't run, what's going to happen? Even in entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah.
When you're kind of scaling, and then you're like, oh, what happens if I make a wrong decision? You're like, I'm going to be known as the failed entrepreneur or whatever it is in your head. But then it's just part of the story. And when you start thinking about like nobody listens to the person who has a perfect life. Nobody wants to hear that, so right? True.
No, absolutely.
How did Oprah become successful? Because she shared everything. And then you hear that. And so that's what makes, gives your life more texture, more meaning.
I love that. Yeah. And we have had, we've talked on other episodes about, we had a professional baseball player who had a very short lived career because he got injured, and his whole identity was that, and it's over. Who are you now? And he's very successful now. He's a very successful business owner and is crushing it. And we keep in touch and he's an inspiration, but it's more impressive actually, if you can pivot and continue down a different path and still have ups and downs, but find success and work your way through adversity and get to abundance. Let's talk about, so you've definitely dealt with health issues for sure. And we're not trying to check all the boxes. We know that everyone has dealt with health, relationship, financial challenges, spiritual challenges. There are all kinds of, plenty of challenges out there. You've definitely checked the box with regard to the health side of things. I think starting out, you started your first business at 25. Is that right? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, here my immigrant mom who's raising four kids on her own, single. And I got into, from my background, low income, all of it, the chances of me getting into a really good school, like a Ivy League type, is very rare, right? And I got into Wellesley, and I was Wellesley College, and I was really fortunate, and it was an exciting time. And I remember walking in here. My roommate is third generation Wellesley. I don't know if people know what that means, but it's pretty impressive. That means their life is pretty stacked. And I came in with my suitcase and masking tape around it, because that's all my family could put together. And then they were looking around, they had their generations, they were excited to meet this person. And they look around, they're like, "Where are your parents?" And I was like, I got dropped off and took a bus. And they're like, and that was my first experience of that. And of course, I'm excited not to have my children have that, but that is a story I'll remember, So now going through that, the reason why I bring up my mother is, here I am working for startups. And then I was like, I want to do my own thing. And she's like, "Do it." And I was like, "Well, what happens if I fail?" And she goes, "You'll be exactly where you are, working for somebody." And I was like, "Okay." And then I go, "Well, what happens if nobody wants to hire me?" And she's like, "You wouldn't want to work for a company like that." And then I went all in. Nobody, there was no rich uncle, anybody helping me. It was basically, I had credit cards and a lot of determination, and I went for it. And that's so awesome. I went all in, worked crazy hours. Some people are like, "How'd you do a million?" I did. I worked crazy hours to make it happen, because there was no, I couldn't fail.
Sure.
And then during that whole journey, even when I was able to get to entrepreneur organization, you have to be over a million to be in there. I would go in there. And at this time, this is back in the early 2000s, it was full of brick and mortar companies. And here I was, this young Latina, talking about marketing, performance-based marketing. They're like, "What?" They had no clue. And that's when I realized, wow, I don't have any support. I'm going to have to figure this out all on my own.
Wow. Yeah. The one thing I want to point out, I do point this out a good bit on the show, but you were bringing to your mother the what ifs. What if this happens? What if this happens? And she was actually presenting to you the even ifs. So even if you fail at this business, you're going to be back where you are anyway. So who cares? And then you say, "Well, what if this happens?" Well, even if that happens, and I think I don't know her story or anything, but just that wisdom and that perspective, that kind of big picture and long-term perspective, I think can really help people in decision-making. And that's not to say everyone should jump into starting a business, but having that even if perspective can give you, confidence and stability in the chaos, if you will. But okay, so you start at 25, you have no money, you start a New York ad agency. How did you fund it? How did things go for that first year?
Got some clients immediately and then just proved it. And back then, this was in the wild, wild west of the internet when there was an affiliate marketing and it just, I could go throw some numbers in that back there. But so we approached it differently. We would go to a website and we would figure out when someone purchased kind of that what's called a funnel, we would go through like the pages and then we say, hey, if we generate this leads or this generate this sales, we want a percentage and we would handle everything. So it wasn't us presenting to the client, like hire us for this, you know,
set amount
$10,000 package. We were performing space and that was great. We performed.
Yeah.
And the biggest lesson I learned, because I was naive, right? I wanted to travel before Instagram was around. Remind you guys, I'm 45. So before all of this, it was trendy. I was like, I want to go to Peru. I want to go to Machu Picchu. I want to travel all these places. How the heck am I going to pull that off? Well, the only way to pull it off, and I tell people to do this now, is take a 2 week off to a country where you have no access to internet. You'll realize if your business can survive without you. And
that's
so
great.
That also helped me understand, like, I remember heading to hike Machu Picchu, and there at that time, there's no internet connection. So before that, I need to make sure that my team could handle any emergency, anything, what to do, all of it. I create systems I didn't even know I should do.
Sure.
And yeah, they were able to handle it, and I was able to create leaders from there and then take on more and more vacations.
I love that. And they say, I guess necessity is the mother of all invention or something like that, right? So you kind of had no choice if you wanted to take this 2 week trip to create these systems and rely on others. It's much easier said than done. It's easy for us to sit here and talk about this on a podcast. Oh, I just, you know, left for 2 weeks and it doesn't sound that crazy. I'm going on a trip for a week after Christmas and I'm pretty sure I'll be working to be honest with you, you know, so much easier said than done to peel yourself away. That's when you really learn if you have a true business or not, or just a job where you work for yourself.
Or I wonder if you could just, I don't know, work for an hour. Or the belief I put in myself, I said, no matter what my team does, there's nothing that I can't do that can clean up their mess.
That's that even if, I love that.
I
told my team that before too. Like, hey, you can break stuff, but we can fix whatever you break. I mean, it's, you know, not saying just be throw caution to the wind entirely, but it's okay. We can fix it, whatever it is. So you got to from 0 to 1 million in revenue in the first year. I mean, that's incredible. One of the other things I took away that when you were talking was that that you got clients first. So one of the mistakes I've made in business, and every industry is different, but is the whole thought process of build it and they will come, you know, and versus get some clients and then kind of build your business as you serve those clients. Can you speak to that at all? That kind of mindset?
By the way, I have done both mistakes.
Got it.
So one mistake I learned very quickly when we were building out a site, it was just like, product view site, all this cool analytics. And we're like, this feature is going to be great. We didn't want to release it until that feature happened. And then guess what? We released the feature, crickets. Nobody freaking used it. And that was the biggest lesson I learned, because there was so much money we invested in that tech, just everything. And then, so you always test it. I always tell people, test it. Minimum viable product, test it. If you want to sell something, a product, before you jump, make that jump,
sure.
Even if you're working for somebody, go sell it or get a case study and see if they were like really amazed by it. Now, real estate's a little different. I don't know how you can test it, but I'm sure maybe.
Yeah, no. Well, we can get into, we'll save that for another episode. But certainly, I mean, this is the point of the podcast, to share mistakes we've made and lessons we've learned so that other people, other entrepreneurs and the listener don't have to make those same mistakes. So, okay. So this was 20 years ago. Walk us through kind of, I mean, this is going to be a very broad brush, but your entrepreneurial journey since then.
So because all those crazy trips I did, I realized, wow, my team doesn't need me as much. This is pretty cool. And then I was like, I built a pretty cool team. Why don't, and all these other companies would come to me and say, hey, would you want to be part of my company? And I was like, sure, I'll take a percentage. Let me be your CMO. So, and then the
Nice.
thing is, my team could just come in. I did the strategy and it was executed. So I was kind of involved in a bunch of businesses, which was really cool. But then there was one time where I had three other partners. I was the only one who was single and had no kids and raising money.
You were doing all the work.
And then they wanted me to be the CEO and raise the money. And here I finally got somebody. We were about to sign the papers. And then I said no. And I pulled. And then the investor pulled. They weren't happy, but I'm friends with one of the partners still. That was a big, hardest decision, one of the hardest, because it was not, it was a one of the things where it's like I always wanted to be like in your 20s, you know, especially from my background. I wanted to, there was a little chip on my shoulder that I wanted to prove, be that entrepreneur, right? And there was this chance, but then I was like, wait, what about if I work myself? I never have family, I never have kids, because I know myself of one of those people who will do everything to achieve it. And that's when I to have a reality check. And
I
what is it
see.
at all costs? It's kind of like running, right? I wanted to run in high school to run and get into like Division One, ended up at Division Three, even though I got full scholarships to Division One because of the education. And then I had to think, do I want to be a professional runner? Well, luckily I didn't, because I would have figured out later on in my life that I wasn't able to full on. But the whole point is, what's the cost that you're willing to do? And I don't think people understand that. They see like these happy reels of like entrepreneurship, but you have to know the cost so you know what you're
Absolutely.
up for.
I love that. That's very real. We try to keep it real on this on the show. And again, it's yes, I couldn't agree more. It's everything has a cost. Everything has pros and cons, right? Everything, if you're spending your time and your focus somewhere, there's an opportunity cost. And so it's not to say you shouldn't do whatever it is, but just know there's a cost to it. That's a great point.
And I
So
think,
you
by the way,
bet.
if you, most important, most people skip this, is really identifying your values and
That's huge.
analyzing what it is. And this is like a random story, but I didn't get married until later on in life. And I would be one of those people who would be in relationships and somehow was like, oh, I didn't want to commit. Then finally, I was like, oh, okay, I need to be in a relationship. And when I analyzed my values and then rank them, I was no longer in that gray area of meeting people. You ever met somebody and you're like, everything's gray up, but you keep going because you see everything else is gray. So for example, I was dating this guy who was in Series B, entrepreneur, family oriented. But guess what? When we would get together, it was almost like if I fit in his schedule. And that's not what I wanted, even though my values, like, so I had to rank my values to see what it was important. So if I wanted to be one of those people who was kind of like, we were a power couple or whatever you call it, and like we met each other and it was like that wasn't my value, but I needed to know that before I continued to invest in.
You didn't want to be just waving in the hallway and
Yeah. And some people like, you know, commit to that.
Absolutely. Okay, so you've had tons of ups and downs with the on the business side of things. I guess walk us through kind of the last 5 years. I know you've had two kids. How has that affected, for the mothers out there who, I guess, females who might become mothers, right? And are thinking about starting a business and maybe want to do it all, or what advice do you have for someone that's thinking about running a business, starting a family? What are some takeaways?
I'm just trying to think of the biggest takeaway. It's almost like running your business and going on vacation. You need to be able to delegate. I think I know that I coach and mentor a bunch of entrepreneurs that still feel that they're the only ones who can do it. And
I see.
if you're the only one who can do your thing, then you don't have a business.
Sure. Makes
right?
sense.
And it's a hard one to kind of swallow, right? And it's not saying that like you always want to have some of your skills replaced, taught, or else you're going to be a prisoner to your own company. And I think there's steps. It's not like a one thing that's right away.
Sure.
So in this case, before I even had kids, I wanted to make sure, like what we do is we have entrepreneurs in groups of five and we have a coach. So I needed to know that when I was on maternity leave, that these coaches can handle everything and move forward. And that was a lot of training, a lot of upfront things. The cool thing about where we are in this world right now, AI is phenomenal. Like here's a quick tip for anybody. Anytime you hear yourself saying, oh, this task is just, it's 1 minute. I can do it faster than teaching. Mm-hmm. Don't put yourself in that mindset. I want you to go find Loom. I think Loom is free. And record the thing and think it out. Like as you're doing stuff, like
I
let's say
it.
It's as simple as writing an email, go to your inbox. I'm writing this email. I'm going to write this message. Like, and that is a
now
bunch
you're speaking
of
my
things.
Language. My team is, they're probably tired of me talking about Loom. I mean, I think I've done three or four Loom videos this morning already.
Oh,
but
what was your record on Loom? I've somehow got the top 4%.
Sure.
Did you see?
Okay. Wow. I'll have to check that out, but it is free to an extent and then it's not free anymore, just like most of these, the software, but couldn't agree more. It's like, think about the next, you're going to do this task again, most likely, right? Or someone's going to have to do it. If it's anything that's going to be done again, record it. And if it's worthless in 6 months, delete the video. It's not that big of a deal. Right. So, but that can absolutely help with, you know, workflow and just delegating and automating things. So
also, by the way, Zoom is definitely worth paying for. I don't know what I pay.
Yeah.
The AI is phenomenal on that. And it'll even make your job easier.
Absolutely. Okay. So you kind of prepared to have kids and got your team ready and, you know, but you knew there would be, it sounds like it
by
made
the way,
your business.
I had my first kid March 25th, 2020 in New York City.
Wow.
And my partner, here I am, my partner was not allowed in the hospital. It was a week where in New York City,
everything was shut down
to the hospital.
Wow.
He like literally dropped me off. Like he was dropping me off to the airport.
That is crazy.
There was nothing that could prepare me for that one, by the way.
No. That's Well, and that's life and entrepreneurship certainly throw curveballs at us. Right. I imagine that was a challenging, you know, say first 6 months or so, or first year, I would presume. What was that like that first year with your first child?
So we lived in a high-rise Manhattan building. And remember during that time in COVID in New York City, it was like the peak and you didn't know if like you're still sanitizing your groceries. So imagine going down an elevator and trying to hold your breath for more than 50 floors and covering your baby because you had no clue if the kid that you've been trying to have, because I've been trying to have, I had a 7% chance of having one kid. I have two.
Wow.
And now you're going through this pandemic and you're like, oh my God, I finally have this kid. Like, hopefully he doesn't die because of COVID or something.
Right.
So getting past that, then I lived in New York City for 20 years and then I can run my company. I've made sure that any company I've always started up, I can run it from wherever. And my husband had a great opportunity in Minnesota. We don't know, I have any family and friends here. And we moved here in August 2020.
Okay. Wow.
And so we're here and we really love it, which is surprising for me because I never, you know, New Yorkers, once you're there for a while, it's hard to leave.
Sure. Absolutely.
So that was a big change.
For sure. I know one of the personal interview topics you've talked about before is how you built your advisory board to meet your husband. Can you touch on that briefly?
Yeah. So part of it, what I was saying is, literally like writing down your values. And then I had to analyze, like, what do I do as a default? And then I found people who, this is a quick version of it, but found people who had happy marriages and people I respect. And then they had to hold me accountable on dates, and they were actually swiping for me on Tinder. Okay. I would have not swiped on my husband because of one picture. I was in this, you know, like super Ann little, like, oh boy, what is that picture? Did he like, he could have done a better picture. Where the other person's like, oh, look at everything they wrote. This is great. So anytime they had to swipe, I had to go on a date with the person. And then I had to go on a date more than one time. And instead of finding everything wrong with the person, I had to find great things about them. So it's this whole accountability because I think we do a lot of mindset stuff. And mindset isolated doesn't work. Everyone always tells you, if you go to any personal development stuff, they always say, find others, bring this to others. It doesn't work without it. It's like, if you, I don't know, health-wise in our house, like I'm lucky, my husband is on the same page. We have really healthy food. There's nothing where I'm like, kind of like, oh no, here's, tempted. There you go. Yeah. So you have to align yourself. It's really good to have other people. And that's me doing it on myself, that having that accountability, finding somebody, I would have slipped into my old patterns, and I wanted to actually make that change.
Makes sense. And you, it just sounds like you're very intentional about things. And one of the ways you hold yourself accountable is to have other people hold you accountable and have that community, which I know is works into your business world as well. That's critical. I mean, you talked right early on about getting that group to being a part of the group for running and holding you accountable for running. You know, and people talk about, well, why do you, you know, why does that person need a coach? They're amazingly fit. And it's like, well, that's why they're fit, because they have a coach and they have a community. And that's, you know, Tiger Woods needs a coach, right? I mean, everybody who excels
everybody
at anything
has like a squad, and people don't realize that this self-myth is self-made is total myth.
I love that. And look, you came from not much, right? It's, I mean, financially, and you've overcome quite a bit, but I couldn't agree more. I hate the whole self-made thing myself. It doesn't exist. You know, certainly you have made decisions and are a big, and your own personal mindset and behaviors are big factors in your success, no doubt. Right. But you couldn't have done it alone. So I love all that. So,
based on that, what most people don't think is like, they assume that successful people always have this amazing mindset, determination. You do. There are times where you're going to get slapped.
Absolutely.
Every professional, everyone gets it. And you need people to kind of like remind you of who you are and why you're that. Because when you're down, like, I'm sure you've been through it where you're like, is my business going to go down, or what's going on? They're like, and you need that support to get you moving forward and get you back on track.
100%. Let's fire off. I'll fire off some rapid fire questions, and then we'll talk more about your business today and how you're helping people. What is one thing that people misunderstand about you, Tanya?
That's a great question. Such a great question. I'm thinking
I always
about the
say,
answer.
I say rapid fire, and that one usually stumps people.
Yeah, that's not a rapid fire.
It's not a rapid fire one, but
I think I actually got one that when they see me, they think that I had it all together, that I had this amazing upbringing, that I must be lucky. Right. So they don't realize everything that I had and the community that built me who I am.
Love that. What is one of your biggest failures or regrets? Something that you would love to be able to do over, even if you've learned from it and something good has come out of it. What would you classify as one of your biggest failures or regrets?
These are not fast. I'm just trying to think of the biggest.
Do you make any mistakes in your first year in business that you could you would do over, do differently?
It's funny because I've already had the story in my head. Like I do a real good practice of journaling and saying, okay, this failed. Like, how do I frame it? What do I learn from it?
Sure,
so now
sure.
The story's already in there that I don't even have the regret. It's so weird.
Sure. Well, that's good. That's good.
So maybe the regret could be like giving people more opportunities in relationships, right? And okay. Because as I told you, I would swipe or like just wasn't committed as much.
Sure. Okay.
That was a weak one. Weak question.
No,
weak
no.
Answer.
I mean, that's a pretty important one, I think, you know. But overall, if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
That to be vulnerable and to share themselves. Because I always had to come across like had everything together. Even that story of the whole suitcase and the masking tape.
Yeah.
Like that took me a while to actually be like, yeah, that's, I did that, you know? But instead I was always trying to fit in. So growing up, you know, in a household where we didn't look like everybody else, it was, we were so busy fitting in. And now I realize that the key is just to be different. And that took me a while. So it's almost telling that 18-year-old, embrace why you're different. And that's going to be your strength later on.
Love it. If you could have coffee, I don't know if you drink coffee, but if you could have coffee or a drink or tea or anything with any historical figure, who would you choose? They could still be alive today.
One I'm currently, I would love to have is Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx. I really just, she's one of the few that actually raised their family and, you know, and build a business.
Awesome. That's, we have not had that answer on the show. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, Tanya, just no strings attached, whatever you want to do with it, what would you do with it?
I would invest back into a community and empower them and try to have it in the sense of like empowering them so that revenue continues to impact others. So probably maybe through entrepreneurship even more or building a school or doing something along those lines.
Great answer. If you had to eat one meal for the rest of your life, just pick one meal that you'd eat every day for the rest of your life, what would that be?
I feel like I eat chicken almost every day. So I guess continue chicken.
It's a good
but
one.
Actually, have you ever heard that guy? I think the author's name is Mark Manson or something like that. And
I think I know
he has a great book. And he's like, when you think about entrepreneurship, think about eating your favorite dessert or whatever it is and eating it every single day. And if you're not bored of that, then you should start that business.
That's great advice. I think it's, is he the one that wrote The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, or is it? Okay.
Yeah, that's him.
We'll just keep it clean and say F, but you know, what's a struggle that you're facing in your business right now?
Right now, it is more in the sense of doing my own copywriting. I want to start writing. I'm going to be writing a book soon. And I also have dyslexia. So that's one of the big challenges. Like I just knew I had to work harder on that. So getting myself comfortable with writing and sharing my stories.
Okay. Well, we had fairly recently Juliette Hahn on the show. She's her own podcast talks about dyslexia and how she overcame it. And she's really good at storytelling and helping others tell their story. So
I might have to, I'm definitely gonna check her out. That's great.
Yeah, might have to connect you guys, you two. What's one piece of advice that you'd give someone starting out in their career, an entrepreneur who's starting, say, maybe an ad agency? What's one piece of advice that you'd give them right now?
To anybody who wants to be an entrepreneur and even an agency, is first go to your network. Do a simple email and say, hey, I'm doing this. Do you know anybody who would benefit from this? Love to chat with them. Nobody leverages their network. And then they forget that their network might know other people. And then get your first five people. All it is five. Even if you have to do free, get a case study, and then go all in.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic advice. And one of the themes in this episode has been just people, right? And community and network and helping each other, which I love. Yeah, absolutely. Instead of the whole build it and they will come thing, it's like, no, play to your strengths. Who do you know that has done this before or can help you do this? And then go get five clients. I love that. That's great. If you could try any occupation other than what you've done before, something totally random, what would it be?
You tell the ones that the questions that stop me, huh? Because entrepreneurship, I feel like
you wear a lot of hats in entrepreneurship. You've check a lot of boxes.
Right. So in entrepreneurship, like I remember a story of my mother. I wanted to be a trainer for a killer whale trainer. I was obsessed with orca. And then she said, instead of being, you know, as a parent, you're just like, she's an immigrant. She wanted to kind of gear me towards something, I don't know, I guess revenue making. She's like, imagine if you can own SeaWorld or Miami's Aquarium, then you can be with, train with them all the time. I was like, yeah. So in my head, I'm like, just get involved in the business somehow.
There you
so
go.
I haven't thought about it, what the next one is. Maybe it would be, if I was going to do anything, is focus on this big problem of education, right? Now that I have kids, I'm starting to see like the levels of the education, what's going on, what is that future like? So maybe dive into that.
Yeah, I love that. Awesome. We'll talk about Owners Up a little bit before we wrap up. What is Owners Up and who is it for? Who do you work with? Who do you serve?
So we work with B2B service-based entrepreneurs who are in their six figures and want to go into up to, I would say, 3 million. I think 3 million at that point is a whole nother level of leadership and training. But it's really about entrepreneurs who have a tendency to know that they're achievers. They work hard, but then now they have like a family and they want to be very present. And they want to know how to make that work-life fusion. And not only the fusion, but living a life that empowers them. So for them, it's kind of running a company that's profitable. And maybe once it gets to the point where that they it's like they only have to put 5 hours in, they invest in another one. And they have a portfolio going on. But being really present so that their kids know them as my parent was always here. My parent was always present. And how we go about that is one of the things that, I don't know, I experience this sometimes too when I don't have it, is that sounding board. Even if I have employees or a team, I need other peers to bounce ideas off of that know exactly how it feels like when the pressure's on you, all those salaries, what is that?
Yeah.
And then helping me make strategic decisions, right? And then holding me accountable, because one thing is, as an entrepreneur, you come from like some sort of school, some sort of structure, and then you start your own business and then you have to build your own structure. Mm-hmm. And then guess what? You can justify things and kind of play in your default. So I call it kind of moving. Oh, that's important. I'm going to move this deadline here because you're the boss.
You're the boss. Sure. Yeah. And you can, can move it there, but like we talked about earlier, there's a cost, right? There's a consequence. Yep. So maybe you shouldn't be moving that deadline, but you're absolutely right. You are in charge, and so it's easy to kind of let things slide or move different things. But also, entrepreneurship can be a lonely space. You know, even if you're busy and working hard and interacting with people, not everybody knows what that's like. And so, I think having a community like you provide, and that that group based accountability structure and it sounds like some coaching and things. I think that's huge. I think more than ever, people are really in need of this kind of, I think this is, I mean, just with the virtual world, which is great, you know, has certain benefits for sure. But I think people are very hungry, especially entrepreneurs are hungry for community, accountability, all the things you've talked about already so much. So what does it look like if somebody signs up tomorrow? What does their next year look like?
I've been struggling with the word community. I'm big on community, but the thing is, I've been in communities where it's the same 10% of people interacting. It's kind of like the people in the classroom where it's the people who are going to raise your hand. Everyone else isn't participating, right? So when it gets so big, you can hide.
Sure.
And you can say you're part of a community.
Yeah. So you keep it small. People. Yep. Absolutely.
Five people that you can actually be okay with disclosing everything that's going on. Cause I don't know about you, I have a hard time disclosing in a big community. I have never been one of those people who raised my hand. So that's what it is. So what it is first thing we do once someone enrolls and we figure out that you have that growth mindset and you want to make that change because we're not into people who just want to hustle. We do an audit and then we help you understand what your default is and where your strengths are, like where you should actually be growing. Sometimes as an entrepreneur, we like to do what's natural to us. right?
Sure.
Instead of what we need to do. And
Okay.
then from there, you have a weekly 1 hour call where you're held accountable to what it is that you decided. And we do it in a fun way where accountability is not by having someone paying like, hey, if you don't do this, you have to do $10. It's more what we found accountability works is you take on a challenge that's going to move you, but then it's immediately. So if they miss a goal or something that they said, they have to sing a song in front of a group. And
oh,
that
wow.
works. So
wow.
What ends up happening is your inner critic, who usually would push off this, whatever, this task that you need to be held accountable to, you're like, oh, I'd rather not sing a song. I'll just do this task.
Yeah, just do
it. And so
it
that
right.
gets over your perfectionism too.
Interesting. Yeah. Because that's a huge part of entrepreneurship, because I can be pretty analytical, but it's like, it has to be good enough or else it's just not going to work. It's not
yeah.
going to be done. So yeah, you do have to get over that perfectionism. I'm in a mastermind group that's a little bit of a larger group, but then we have smaller groups now that are where we meet monthly, and it's kind of a similar, not the exact same thing, but a similar thing where I feel much more comfortable opening up as opposed to, sharing in the larger group and occupying everyone's time. And we really get to know each other on a, much better in the smaller group. So, that's great. So what's the business look like as we wrap up here? What's your business look like in the next year? What's 2024 have in store for you?
So 2024, I will have some part of my book done. And the journey of the book is to help people understand that sometimes you have to build your squad that you need to achieve any monumental goal. And I think that I didn't realize this till later on that I was really lucky to have my family who was super supportive. But there's other people who have a family that might not be encouraging them. And not because they don't believe in them, it's just that they're scared. Like, oh, if we don't want, like, if you do this and you fail,
yeah,
we don't want you to be sad, or, we want you to be financially
sure.
successful. So sometimes you don't have the right support around you. And
yeah.
So how do you create that? And how do you find
That's
the
great.
People who are going to move you forward? And
Being,
so yep. I believe that anybody, no matter where you're at, if you have the right squad, you can achieve any monumental goal.
Love it. There's that intentionality again. That's really good. So speaking of a book, I didn't ask you, do you have a book or two that you could recommend for our listener?
There was a book I just recommended. It was Dan Martell,
That's true. You
Buy
did.
Back
You
Your
did.
Time. Yeah.
That's right.
It's a really good one.
Yeah. Dan Martell, Buy Back Your Time. I think you recommended that one to me before we hit record. So that's really good. Awesome. And then of course your own book, I'm assuming you don't have a title yet for it.
Yeah. I thought about Squad Up, but we're still playing around with it.
Got it. Awesome. That's great. Well, Tanya, I know you got to run. I know you got to get to your workout, and we appreciate you squeezing us in here. Where can our listeners find you online?
Yeah, they can find me on my Instagram, Tanya C. Alvarez. So the letter C, Alvarez. And then DM me and I'll send you any frameworks you guys want, accountability or how to get there.
Fantastic. Last question. What is one question I have not asked you that you wish I had? Anything you want to cover?
I think that a good one. I think that everyone always assumes it's about doing and achieving, but in order to be your best self in anything, you got to work on yourself. So personal development is a huge one. Go and start investing in yourself. And even though you feel like you could get it from a book, I think someone told me this and it's a little crude, I guess, but they said, imagine reading a book about sex, right? And then doing it, right? There's sometimes you only have to do it. And I was like, that is hilarious about personal development. So there's only so much that you
sure.
actually have to do. Cause a lot of people are like, I can read it. And it's like, there's a part of reading and then the action. So
sure.
Take the action, guys, and get yourself into whatever programs, personal development, whatever it is, or read a book and create a group around it so you guys can like practice and analyze and do it.
Fantastic. Tanya Alvarez, this has been a great chat. We've covered a lot. I'm not going to go through it all right now, but this has been fantastic. A lot of nuggets for sure that we're going to be able to take away from this. And you've got a ton of experience with entrepreneurship, health challenges, motherhood in a challenging time for sure with COVID and the pandemic and everything, and many things we haven't covered, but I just want to thank you for your time. This has been a blast. So thanks a lot, Tanya.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome.
And to the listener out there, you're welcome, Tanya. And to the listener out there, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us. And that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Hey there, it's Jamie Bateman. Ever felt boxed in by life's challenges? Dive into my new book, From Adversity to Abundance, Inspiring Stories of Mental, Physical, and Financial Transformation, available now on Amazon. From a former bank robber's redemption to a young entrepreneur's victory over hurdles, these stories are not just inspiration. They're the roadmaps to your transformation. Whether for you or as a powerful gift to friends and family, especially those who might not tune into podcasts, this book is a beacon to a life of abundance. Ignite that inner fire and set your course to the life you've imagined. Purchase yours today on Amazon and light the path for someone you love.